In Scotland, when friends get together, they blether. When these three friends happen to be Scottish Blue Badge tourist guides, you can be sure that the country that they're so passionate about will be right at the heart of their discussions. Be it contemporary or historical, culinary or cultural, reminiscence or anecdote, from accommodation to zoos, the chat will range right across the entire alphabet of topics and issues that are live and happening in Scotland right now. We hope that you'll join us. There's nothing to beat a richt good blether.
And you could also join in our blethers on social media. You can find us as at Scottish Blethers on both Facebook and Instagram. We post additional content during the week that supports the podcast episode.
We love making the podcast and would love it if you could share them with your friends and leave a review on the platform of your choice.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the series 3 of Scottish Blethers. I'm Liz Lister.
And I'm Helen Houston.
And we have fulfilled our New Year resolution. We have recorded the new intro with it's just two corbies sitting on a wall, two blackbirds on a wall, not the three of us.
That's right, yes. We've been planning this re-recording for some time, but we've actually got the recording done now, Liz. Our trusty editor will get it all put onto the music well beyond our technological abilities.
Excellent. If the weather forecast is correct, we might be snowed in because it's forecasting very heavy snow.
Yes. Well, I walked down the village today and it was absolutely bitter. Now, you know me, Liz, I never wear a hat. Mm-hmm. Well, today I really felt even my thick mop of hair. The wind was getting to my scalp, or the cold was getting to my scalp. It was cold.
Well, that reminds me that we moved into the village on the 17th of January, 37 years ago. Oh. Which is anniversary coming up soon. And on that day, as we were arriving and the removal van was unloading all our furniture, as it drove off, it was sliding down the hill. The snow was so thick. And after that, we were snowed in for 3 days.
Time to unpack the boxes.
Exactly. So, you know, my parents would say, see, we told you shouldn't move out to the wilds of Fife. You know, we knew this would happen. But it's been very seldom that it's happened since. But it does occasionally occur. And so maybe with all this heavy snow that's forecast, we might be snowed in. We could do a few episodes of Scottish Blethers if we are.
Yeah, and I have already been sledging, but that was before Christmas.
Well, I hope you weren't doing up at the golf course.
Don't tell the golfers I was at the golf course, but I didn't go on the greens. I did not go on the greens.
Yeah, at your own risk, I would stress, at your own risk. Yes. Well, Helen, we could blather all day, but we chose, you know, we're talking about the cold and we've had beautiful frosty weather and been out, you know, what we were talking about in the last episode about, no, the episode before, about our little strolls or meandering, stravaguing around. And I've had a few with my husband and he's now getting to the stage that he's coming up with ideas. Why don't you do this and why don't you do that on Scottish Blethers? But he's coming up with a few good ones. So he came up with the idea of Scottish place names.
Yes, because we do get quite confused looks from people when we pronounce names and it's not spelt anything like that. Or as you say, people get off the airport and they get into the taxi and they ask to go for places like Glasgow. Mm-hmm. And the taxi driver looks and said, pardon?
Or Edinburgh.
Or Borough. Edinburgh.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of pronunciations. Those are the common ones. But that's before you get into the very obscure. You know, a lot of our listeners have been to what they might pronounce as Cull Ross, which in Fife is called Cúras. And then we have Milngavie, which is pronounced Mulgai. And of course, Kirkcaldy, which is Kirkcaldy.
That's right. Yeah, there's some really good ones. And oh, the best one. I've got a friend who lives here, Kinyucher.
Mm-hmm,
but it actually spells like Kilconquer, mm-hmm. But it's Kinyucher.
Right, so it's what the locals call it. And another good one, Echelfechim. And you think, is he swearing at me?
Well, I suppose if you were Irish, it might sound a wee bit like that.
It's a small village in Dumfries and Galloway, and you might have heard of Ecclefechan tarts.
Yes, now, are they, they've got raisins or sultanas in them, haven't they? Or is it syrup and breadcrumbs?
Well, I think it's syrup, the Ecclefechan ones.
Syrup and breadcrumbs, I think.
I think you're thinking of Selkirk Bannocks. I've got the...
Selkirk Bannocks have got the currants in them. Currants, I love the Selkirk Bannocks.
I think
Bannock,
an Ecclefechan tart is a little syrupy tart. Instead of jam tart, it's a syrupy tart.
I'm so pleased I've had my tea.
And it's got nuts in it as well, from memory.
All right.
We'll need
to
check that one out and put a picture up on social media of an Ecclefechan tart.
That's right.
When we look at Scotland's place names, they're really fascinating. I mean, people make a life's work out of the academic research going into the place names, but they go right back into the mists of time, to the first recorded records and beyond that. And they're very much tied up with the history of Scotland. They chart the people who came exploring, you know, who just passed through, but they had to leave a record, they had to leave a chart or a map, or they had to tell stories. And perhaps the oldest of these were the Greek geographers. In the first century AD, we have Pliny that left a record, and then Ptolemy, who was a Greek geographer from the second century AD. So they were the beginnings of the place names.
Yes, and the people who came in just, you know, they tended to just, when they settled or just settled down, they then called the place that they'd settled a name that was familiar to them, probably where they came from. And so the whole of the Scotland map is dotted with names from, well, not all over the world, but from vast chunks of the world. And I was just thinking, Liz, when we were doing this, very like the United States of America. If you look at all the names that are on the map, they tell the story of who has settled and where they've come from.
Yeah, and it was most important was their language, because they would name the place after something that was familiar, that you know, earmarked the place and made it recognisable, and they would use their own linguistic term for it. So if you track the people who've come and invaded and settled, of course, the most famous of these we've already done an episode on, and that was the Celts. Now, there's been people living in what we now call Scotland right back since they came over the land bridge after the last ice age. But it was only when we began to get the first written records that we can actually see the names of the places. And in that time, when we get the first written records, much of the country that we now know as Great Britain, the island that we know as Great Britain, was controlled by what we call the Brittonic tribes.
Yes, sometimes, the Britons are they just moved up and just came into the country and left their names. But a lot of, we did in the Celtic episode, Liz, the P-Celtic and Q-Celtic and the origins of that. And I think some of our names come from the Welsh side of the Celtic language.
Yeah, I mean, the first Britons came up round about the first century AD. And they spoke the language Brittonic, which is very similar to Welsh and also Cornish and Brittany as well.
Yeah.
But after the Romans came up, they didn't really leave as much of an influence on the place names of Scotland as they did in England, because, of course, they never came north of the Firth and Clyde waste of Scotland.
They came and had a wee look and said, oh, I don't know if I want to be there.
Nothing worth fighting over. Let's just go back. Too cold. So they didn't really leave. They had things like Bertha for Perth, but not a big influence on Scottish place names. But after they left, many of the Brittonic tribes died out, and up from the south, we got a people called the Angles. So they migrated and they formed the sort of the southeast quarter, if you like, of Scotland. And the Angles, their ancestry, I suppose, was based in Germany, and also Dutch and French influences. So many of the place names in the Borders and Lothians and the southeast of Scotland have got these Anglian origins. Places like Coldingham in the Borders, a lot of the German place names end in Ingaham. Ham means a homestead or a group of homesteads, and Wick means a farm. So places like Berwick and Borthwick and Fenwick, Fishwick, Prestwick, all of these are coming from this Anglian origins. And another one that people might be familiar with, Melrose. Melrose, again, the language of the Gaels, the language of the Angles, and Melrose meant bare moor.
Yes, and it's quite interesting that the Melrose, if you look at Melrose Abbey, Liz, you've got the coat of arms of Melrose, and it doesn't have anything about a moor or a bare moor or anything like that. It's got a mel, which is the hammer of a stonemason, and a rose, Melrose.
Yeah.
So the evolution of names and their origins, even theirs, you know, the bare moor is where the name comes from, but actually their coat of arms have moved forward to buildings and stonemasons, and the fact, well, you see, it's a rose, so let's just put a rose up. It's interesting.
Yeah, very, very important how they've evolved. And you know, some of them are so obscure that they're not recognisable now, which is why it's such an important area of academic research, going back and trying to find the origins. And of course, the next big invasion was from the West. During the 6th century, we've talked before about Columba and the other missionaries coming across and the formation of this kingdom called Dalriada or Dalriada along the west coast in Argyll. And Gaelic became the dominant language, not just in the West, but right across Scotland.
Yes, and the Gaelic in Scotland kind of derived from the Irish Gaelic. So today you've got two relatively distinct languages called Gaelic, Irish Gaelic and Scottish Gaelic.
And then perhaps the last, but you know, as you wander around Scotland, you know, you mentioned it before about people saying burrow. A burrow is a very important, and that was the Normans. So after the Anglo-Saxons, like the Anglians, you've got the Normans coming in. And during the 12th century, David I, one of our greatest kings, he brought the Normans up into Scotland and he introduced the pattern of settlement called a burrow, which means a stronghold. So very, very important term in terms of Scottish place names.
Yes, and not only that influence was the place names, but he also, it was a complete different organisation structure for townships and places from David I. And of course, that was after the Norman conquest of England in the 11th century, 1066 and all that, that the Normans brought this completely different way of life and language over. And David I had grown up and been educated down in England at some point as well.
Yep, and he thought it was the only way that he was going to stop himself getting bumped off like his brothers had been before, bring up these big Normans to support him, give them land in exchange for their loyalty. So, yeah, I mean, we could go on for ages about how the names of these places are tied up with our history and how, you know, it's how obscure many of them are. But I think it's worthwhile having a look at some of them and seeing just how they've evolved, because they're so important. It's not just to tell someone where you live, but also each place has got its own cultural identity. We see that really strongly down in the Borders with things like the Riding of the Marches.
Yes, and a lot of these things have come over, these traditions have come with the original settlers of the area, and you know, maybe lost in times in some places, but yes, but things like Edinburgh, you know, we all know the town Edinburgh, but that was Edwin's Borough, Edwin's town. And then before that, it was known as Dun-Eden. Dun meaning D-U-N, meaning a fort on a hill. Well, Edinburgh Castle, you know, you have to say that as a fort on a hill. And Dun-Eden, Edwin's, the fort on the hill of Edwinstown.
Yeah, but I think people, sorry to correct you, Helen, but I think there's a lot of controversy, all this academic research, because the records show that, in fact, it was called Edinburgh before Edwin, who was a king of the Angles, ever came north. So they reckon it's more along the lines of the Gaelic, maybe the fort on the rock, or the fort of the rock face, even from the Gaelic.
All right.
So, you know, this is what it's all about. It's constantly changing, constantly evolving. Same with Glasgow.
Yes, because you always think of Glasgow being sort of going right back to St Mungo's. But in fact, I think it goes beyond that. Glass, G-L-A-S, meaning green. And, you know, Gow is a hollow. So it's a green hollow. And that, if you've been to Glasgow Cathedral, you can see it's quite a dip at the back of Glasgow Cathedral, where, of course, the name was originally used at the religious settlement at the Molendiner Burn. In what is now Glasgow.
And then through time, because it was the familiar use of the language, they thought it was held in affection, and so it got the name Deer Green Place. So that's its nickname, Deer Green Place. So these names are all evolving through the Brittonic, the Gaelic, into modern interpretations of it. Aberdeen, bit simpler, Aber comes from another Brittonic which merged with the Picts, because of course we can't forget that up in the northeast, even before the Britons arrived, we had the Picts, the painted people, the Picti, but we don't have a lot of records of their history. But Aber is a word that is said to be common both to the Pictish or the Brittonic language, and it's said to mean river mouth. Aberfeldy is another example of this. Aber.
Abernethy. Uh-huh. You know, it's just Aberdeen, Abernethy, Aberfeldy. They're just lovely names. And of course, the mouth of is also the Gaelic. In Inverness means at the mouth of the River Ness. Inver from the Gaelic meaning at the mouth of.
Absolutely. But Gaelic became, you know, as I say, it spread out. And up until the 11th century, it was the national language of half of Scotland until, of course, after the events at Culloden, it was suppressed and people couldn't speak it, but it was the dominant language. So it's not surprising that many of our place names still have their origins in Gaelic. And there's a few terms, particularly geographical terms. If you think about it, if you wanted to name your place and it sat at the bottom of a muckle great mountain, you'd want to name it after the mountain, the Ben.
Yes. That's right. And Ben, of course, is the word that they use for a mountain. And what is a mountain and what is a hill? We've done another podcast on that, haven't we?
So places that are derived from Ben or hill or mountain. Benarty and Fife, not far from here. Benderloch, uh-huh. Benbecula, lots of places with the name Ben. And also Bal or Bally. It's a term for a settlement, a village, a hamlet, a farm, but some kind of permanent settlement. So Bal, we've got places like Balerno, Balgreen,
which mm-hmm. is in Edinburgh, and they've got Balgony in Fife as well. We're good. Fife has got a lot of interesting place names, Liz.
It has.
Origins. Uh-huh.
Because I suppose it's had so many of these settlers passing through it, but still the Picts, very, very influential in place names in Fife. But a lot of Ochen Lake in Fife, and that's Gaelic. Again, I'm not a Gaelic speaker, but A-C-H-A-D-H, I don't know how
you
pronounce.
You're on your own, Liz.
But Ochen is to do with the agricultural activities of the people that settled there. So that's why I think Fife being such an important agricultural area, we've got a lot of Ochens round about Fife.
Yeah, and the other one that's quite, it's Knock, it's usually spelled K-N-O-C-K now, but its original spelling would have been C-N-O-C, and it means a hill. But you get things just, I'm looking out to tonight, on Knock Hill, people settling and not realising that the word knock actually means hill. So you don't need to say it's Knock Hill, because it's you're actually saying hill. And lots of the word knock in various things. You've got the knock in Crieff. Favourite walk in Crieff is to go round the knock. Now there they know it's the hill. The hill in Crieff is just known as the knock.
And another good example of that is Oban, because Oban in Gaelic means little bay. And yet, you know, when you look down, you're looking at what they call Oban Bay. So they're calling it Little Bay Bay again, because the origins of the name have been lost through time.
Yes, I suppose. And then talking about bay or a hill, we said in the Knock, often the word law is used, L-A-W is used to denote hill. So you don't need to say Dundee Law. You just say it's the law, or in Dundee, the law, the law.
And huich and hoch are other important Gaelic words as well. Huich is a cliff or a precipice, and sometimes it was often associated with birds. For example, you get corbyhuich and ravenshuich, corbyhuich in Aberdeenshire and ravenshuich in Lothian. I suppose that was because of the birds nesting on the cliffs.
After the birds that were seen around there nesting on the cliffs or whatever,
And so, one that's close to my own heart, Avi Moor in Gaelic. Afi means a pass and Moor means big, so the big pass. Good example of how you usually get some sort of geographical feature and then there's some sort of qualifying addition to it. It's either big or small, easter or wester, upper or lower. So Avi Moor, the big pass, which would be through the Cairngorm Mountains.
Yeah. And of course, the one that we see a lot around, in, especially in house names, is Tigh, T-I-G-H. Mm-hmm. But you get that in place names, like in, you know, Tindrum. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of houses, and it's the T-I-G-H is T-Y there. And Tinnabruach, you know, just a Gaelic Tigh, meaning the house on the hill.
Mm-hmm. Church is another good one, because kirk is very common. It's the old Scots word. But before that, we've talked before about seal, column, seal. The Gaelic word for a small Celtic church was seal. So, you know, lots of words associated with churches like Kirkmichael, Kirkoswald. But a good one is Falkirk, because Falkirk is, you can take it as kirk, the old Scots word for church, and fall, meaning field or fold. But it's evolved through lots of different spellings, Gaelic, Latin, Scots. And in Gaelic and English, that's another word for a Scots brick, old speckled church. So it was because it was made of stones of different colours. It sort of a variegated look to it. So the old Scots word for that was faw, which is different colours. So Falkirk.
Yeah. And I wonder whether the changes in language came as people were becoming more sort of anglified in their speaking of English. The old Scots was kind of dying away, and it was to make it, and people were travelling further, so it was to make it more easier for travellers. So instead of the Falkirk, that was quite difficult. Mind you, that's what how we pronounce it now. It became Falkirk, F-A-L.
But that's a good example of how, you know, you can have a spelling and a pronunciation, but then the locals have completely other ideas. A good example of that is Anstruther, which is also in Fife, which came from the Gaelic for a small stream. But the locals call it Ainster, which
that's
has really
right.
got no rhyme or reason to it at all.
No,
so
but there's quite a lot of place names spelling, if you spell them out, like Anstruther. Uh-huh. And then it just becomes too long a word for locals. It just becomes Ainster.
Yeah.
And like the other one that we pass quite a bit, Liz, when we're on a Rick Steves tour, is spelt out like Grantley.
Uh-huh.
And it's Grantlaird. And then there's Gramley up on the Murray Folk, Murray Firth, which is Gardenstown, Gramley. Uh-huh. So it's just, I suppose it's a shorthand or
yeah,
a short
laziness.
Speak. Yes.
Yep, a familiarity with it, which makes it even more complex for anybody trying to get to grips with it. Another good Gaelic one is drum. Lots of drums all over Scotland. Drum Chapel, Drum na Drochit, Drum Ochter. Drum is the Gaelic for a ridge.
Yes, and in fact, when we think of all these places that have got the drum in them, you could just visualise they are on a ridge.
Mm-hmm.
You say you talked about Drum Ochter, and you've got Drum Tocher, around Glasgow.
Uh-huh.
They're all ridges.
Uh-huh. And another one, you're talking of that, drum being ridge, the Gaelic word for bay is Cambus. So you've got lots of places that were situated on a bay. You've got Cambus Kenneth, which is not on a bay now, but it's at the estuary of the Firth of Forth. Cambus O'May up in Aberdeenshire. Cambus Slang, that means bay of the ship. And that was because Cambus Slang, although it's close to Glasgow, the small oared vessels came up the Clyde and anchored there because the bigger ships couldn't get up.
Yeah, and also, when you're driving around the Isles, Liz, you'll have noticed you just see signposts to Cambus.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of people live, I'm a number 5 Cambus.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so they don't even say it's the bay of such and such, it's just Cambus.
Yep.
But the one I like, Liz, is, and there's a story attached to it, is Dun, meaning the hill fort, D-U-N, meaning a hill fort.
It's so probably the most common, isn't it?
Yeah. But I love the idea, the origin of the Dunce. You know, Duns is a town in the Borders, and meaning a fort built on a hill, and the motto is Duns Dings A, meaning Duns beats all. And the original name for the residents of Duns were the Dunces. And after the 13th century theologian, John Duns Scotus, who's quite a well-known theologian, and his followers were called Dunces, but as he fell out of fashion, they became known as Dunce, D-U-N-C-E. And then we've all seen the cartoons of the dunce sitting in the corner of the classroom wearing the dunce's cap. So perhaps John Duns Scotus wouldn't be too happy with that.
It just brings to mind up on one of the Western Isles, I think it's North Uist, it's quite close to where Flora MacDonald was born. There's an old temple and college which he taught at, this philosopher. Uh-huh. And there, it's John Duns Scotus. It's got a storyboard to his name describing this dunce. So anybody that's been up to North Uist, they might remember that from their visit there.
Yes, and one of the tour operators I do some work for are Scotus tours. Mm-hmm. After John Duns Scotus, because they're usually sort of church groups.
Yep. And moving through our cities, we've got Inverness that you've done at the mouth of the Gaelic name. And then we've got Perth, which again comes from the sort of a combination of the Picts and the Britons, meaning bush or thicket or a copse. And of course, then the Romans called it Bertha. Then we come to our other city, Stirling. Daughter of the Rock.
Daughter of the Rock, that's right. Well, Stirling, quite often we're asked, is Stirling where sterling silver comes from, or pound sterling? And no, the answer is absolutely no, it's not. It's thought that the name might have had its origins around about AD 600 to 900, when it was an area called the Manu, and it was conquered then by the Angles, we've talked about, coming up from the south. And then they were pushed out by the Picts from the north, and the Britons reacted to this and burned down the settlement of Dunblane near Stirling. And then Kenneth MacAlpine rose in on his white charger and brought order to the chaos. But then the Vikings arrived. So this was just a place of conflict. There was just continuous conflict. And as we know, the only crossing at this time, this is going back to about the, you know, the 10th, 11th, 12th centuries, the only crossing was over the water, over the Forth, was at Stirling. So it maybe became known as a place of conflict. And Stribelin is from strive, meaning a place of conflict. So the name, and the name, that name appears on the 13th century map of Scotland, where you see a very definite little sort of link between north of Scotland and south of Scotland over the water at Stirling. Mm. So that is the name of Stirling. Nothing to do with sterling silver or anything like that.
All to do with strife, trouble and strife, story trouble of my strife, life.
Well, that's it.
Daughter
that's
of the Rock, I'm saying nothing. I'm saying nothing. saying nothing. But you did mention there about, you know, that it's right at the centre. They sometimes refer to it as the buckle and the belt of Scotland, you know, so that it's a natural place that if you control that, you control Scotland. But to the north of that, you talked there about the Picts and their influence. And they were especially around about the Fife and the north. East coast up through Angus and Aberdeen, Perth and Kinross. And the term that we see over and over again across that area is pit or pert, or pit or pet. Now in Pictish, that means a portion or a share. So it's talking about a piece of land. And so it's very much involved in Pictish settlement. And we find this all over. We've got Pit and Weem, Pit Carmack, we've even got Pit Lochry in Perthshire, going right up to Angus. And also another Pictish word, carden, carden, for example, in Kincardine, and that refers to a thicket or an enclosure. So Pictish language definitely having an impact on our place names.
Yeah, and one we talked about Dunn earlier, we didn't mention our local town, our local new city of Dunfermline. And this was around the time of Malcolm Canmore, and the name originated from that time, and it was known as Dunfermline Tain, meaning foreigner's town on the hill. We always thought of it as the fort by the Crooked Burn, but in Malcolm Canmore's time, that's in the 11th century again, just after the Norman invasion and the Normans coming up into Scotland on invitation, not to invade. It became known as the foreigner's town on the hill because the Gaelic-speaking population at that time were beginning to be outnumbered by all these Normans coming up, or the people, because Malcolm had married a Saxon princess, and they brought up with them some people from England, and there were more foreigners. So Dunfermline Tain became known as the foreigner's town on the hill. And then as they settled in and became local, then it just went back to Dunfermline.
Oh, yep. And of course, that's We are in the central belt of Scotland. We've talked about the Celts, we've talked about the Gaels, the Angles. But if you're up in the north, particularly in the northern and western Isles, but also along the northern parts of the Scottish mainland, the big, big influence up there, the Vikings. The Scandinavian Vikings. Viking means to raid. So they came across on their seaborne raids and they stayed and they settled. And so many of the places up there have got Norse origins based on Norse words. Words like, I don't know how you pronounce it, V-I-K, Vik, a wick meaning bay. So Lerwick means muddy bay. And even Uig, you know, several Uigs. We've got it as a village on Skye. There's also Uig on Harris. That's a corruption of Vic. And it also means bay, which is quite apt, yeah, given that Uig on Skye is the ferry port.
Yeah. And of course, there is just the town of Wick.
Yes.
Very north. Yes. Yeah. On the bay.
And very much. Yeah. And then you've got at the Kirkwall, which is another Norse word, which comes from Kirkjuvar, church bay. So it was built, the town of Kirkwall was built in the time of the Vikings round about the magnificent cathedral that they had built to honour one of their great heroes, Magnus, the Earl of Orkney. And so Kirkjuvar meant church bay, the bay around this famous church.
And that cathedral was completely unscathed during the Reformation in the 1500s, the religious Reformation. So it's still standing there, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, you see lots of Norse words in the place names. Dale, Norse for valley. So you've got a lot of places like Brosdale and Laxey, another good one. Laxar means salmon. Laxdale means the salmon valley. Which also, as we pass through Mull, when we go on our trip across Mull, we pass along the side of the river Lusser. So Lusser, another name for salmon.
Yeah, and... and then we've mentioned the tidal island of Oronsay. Oronsay, I always love that. On the Isle of Skye, the south of Skye, you've got the Isle Oronsay, and it's just lovely just to see all these things, and you think they mean something.
Yep, and to think of a lot of the islands, Eriski, that's Norse for Eric's Island. We've got Hwalsey in the Shetland Islands, which is Whale Island. So lots of Norse words depending on the animals and the geographic features. Home, another good one. That's a Norse word, but this time the Norse weren't just up in the north, they also were down in the south in the borders as well. And Langham, down in the borders, that comes from lang, meaning long, and home, which is the Norse word for a water meadow.
Yeah, and you mentioned the landscapes giving rise to place names as well. And you know, through everything, whether it be the hills and the mountains or the glens, you've got all these words which are incorporated into places. Like you've got a burn, meaning a small river, and you've got Black Burn and Burn of Birth, Bannock Burn, you know, all names of places. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Carse, that's one that we know a lot of. We go through on our travels in Scotland. Carse is a sort of a stretch of low alluvial land along the banks of a river. We've got the Carse of Forth, or the Carse of Stirling, it's called, Carse of Tay. These are usually quite fertile areas with good, you know, good growing. Carse of Tay, famous for soft fruit. And then, of course, you've got the Corries and the hills, and they've given a lot of names as well. Corrie Shalloch, you know, up in the Cairn Gorms.
Yep. And I suppose as we move through into more recent times, instead of naming places after geological or geographical features, it became much more common to name them after people. So, you know, when we think about the landowners that moved their tenants off the land into planned villages, we've got places like Grantown on Spey, Grant Town, the Grants. Yeah. They developed this planned settlement in 1765. And similarly, local to us in Fife, the area of Charlestown,
that
was
yes.
the Elgins, the Earl of Elgin. We've got Helensburgh, which was built by Sir James.
Not after me, Liz, not after me.
No, not after you. You didn't marry Sir James Colquhoun.
Even I don't go back to 1776.
Not quite, not quite.
But he built it in honour of his wife. He built it along the lines of Inverness New Town, and he called it after his wife, who was Lady Helen. Now, she was Countess of Sutherland, another lady, Lady Helen. And yes. Countess of Sutherland, as soon as I saw that, I thought, oh, she had the money. The Sutherlands had the money. Yeah. So that was probably quite a bit to do with the building of Helensburgh. But it can be quite obscure, people. Bell's Hill, which is just outside Glasgow. Bell's Hill is named after a Mr. Bell, who owned a stone quarry there, but nobody knows anything about him. So.
And then you've got further along in the Vale of Leven, you've got Alexandria, and you've got Renton. These were the daughters of Alexandra Smollett, who had weaving mills there as well. But his son was Tobias Smollett, who was the author. Some of our people might recognise the name.
Yeah. Yeah, like those ones, that's along Loch Lomond. But then you get into another topic for the future, surnames. Because, of course, people take the name of their town as their surname. For example, Glasgow is a common surname. We've got Johnson, we've got Lauder, Harry Lauder. And Bigger is another one. Bigger is a place in the Borders to the west, and it's thought that it comes from the Gaelic big, meaning barley, and in the Norse term, garder, meaning a field. But the bit I love, tongue twister. Now, this is where Helen holds her breath and hope I don't get it terribly wrong here, because it could all go disastrously wrong. But there is a question in the form of a tongue twister.
Deep breath, Liz.
Right, so after Bigger, this time, right, Mrs. Bigger had a baby boy. Who was Bigger? Mrs. Bigger or her baby? The answer, of course, the baby, as he was a little bigger.
Phew, you did it, Liz, you did it. No I's and U's getting mixed up.
Well, any more that, you know, that particularly come to mind when you think of it, any particularly that are difficult to pronounce or quite different from how they're spelt?
Well, I think something like Weems Bay. Mm-hmm. It looks like Wemyss, uh-huh. But it's just Weems, nice and straight. That's over in the west. And
that's again named after the landowner, the Earl of Weems. Yeah. Yep. And what about on the going to the west, Strathaven. Pronounced Strathaven, but it's spelled Strathaven.
Yes. Oh, but some of the ones that we drive through, Liz, that just, they actually are pronounced the way they look. Mm-hmm. Ochtermuchty. Mm-hmm. Ochtermuchty is a good one. And people will know that is where the Proclaimers come from. And of course, Jimmy Shand and mm-hmm. Johnny Cash. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, Johnny Cash is Falkland.
Falkland, yep. His ancestors were Falkland. You still got Cash fused there. But again, this idea of places evolving, I think an interesting example of this is Fort William, because Fort William is named in English after the garrison there, the fort, after William, Duke of Cumberland, Butcher Cumberland to many. And so there has been many an attempt, particularly around about the 1930s, there was a big campaign by the Fort William Celtic Vigilance Society, and they wanted the name changed because of its connotations with these terrible times, and they wanted it changed to Abernevis. They've not been successful, so it's still Fort William and Garrison, the garrison,
but it was always known as Inverlochy. Uh-huh. At the mouth of Loch Lochy.
Yeah.
So, and it was just changed the fort, as you say, when they built the fort. And to people in Fort William to be, you know, to refer to it at that time, they just, as the fort, was such, you know, awful to them. So they did call it Inverlochy for quite a long time afterwards. But obviously they haven't quite got them to change the signboards yet.
Yep. But some names will just always remain completely inexplicable. One of them, Bear's Den. I know that that's close to your heart, Helen. You've got family there.
Yes.
But the first settlement there was called New Kilpatrick. And then that changed to New Kirk. So you see this evolution. It's got nothing at all to do with Bear's Den. So you think, well, how did it get the name Bear's Den? Well, it took that name in the 19th century when they built the railway station there. And it was named after a nearby house. But nobody knows why the nearby house was called Bear's Den. Because when you walk around Bear's Den, there's certainly not many bears strolling around the street. Very prosperous Bear's Den these days.
Yeah, that's where my son and his family live in Bear's Den. But of course, it was a Roman settlement as well. Uh-huh. Might come from the Roman days. And of course, the church in Bear's Den, I think it's still called New Kilpatrick Church.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of these we'll just never know the answer to, but that's part of the academic research that goes on. So word of the week, right? Word of the week. I've got one that I really like because one of my favourite place names is Ochenshugel. Ochenshugel. Spent shuggle. Ochenshugel. And you see this because it was always on the front of the Glasgow trams. It was the terminus for the Glasgow tram. And so many a people have thought that the name Ochenshugel was from the word shugel. Now, shugel means to shake up, to shook up. And if something's shugly, it's very shaky, right?
As we say here, Liz, your coat's on a shugly peg. If you're about to get your jotters, as they say in Scotland, or your P45, or get the sack.
That's right, your jacket's on a shugly peg. So shugly, Ochenshugel, but it's nothing at all to do with that. It's actually the Scots version of the original Gaelic name, which was Shugel is Gaelic for a rye field. So it shows you how things have gone through time and people can have their own interpretation and they know nothing at all about the original origin of a place. But it does well for word of the week. Shugel means to shake, or shugly means all shook up.
Oh, very good, very good.
And your word?
Well, I was just thinking that I'm going to use the word brae because we do use it a lot, B-R-A-E, meaning a hillside or a small or a bank of a river or a road with a steep gradient nowadays. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's derived from the Gaelic, meaning the upper part of something. Mm-hmm. So you get it in poetry, the banks and braes, O bonny doon. So a brae. And we still use it. Oh, it's an awful walk up. This is a steep brae, this, to get up. So
yeah, my legs are fair shugly by the time I get to the top.
Yes, that's true.
But another one we could have used this week, bide. Because instead of saying in Scotland, where do you live? Or where do you stay? We often say, where do you bide?
Yeah, because live and stay has different meanings in Scotland as it has elsewhere as well. So bide's much clearer. That's where you stay.
Yep, and of course then that comes to bide in, which is a good old-fashioned...
now we're getting into dangerous territory here, Liz.
A bide in is another name for a common partner, a live-in wife. A bide in.
I think it's a common law partner, not a common partner.
Sorry, a common law partner. On that, it's all deteriorating. We better wrap it up here.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Liz, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Helen. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
And there we have it, the end of another episode of Scottish Blethers. If you'd like to join us on social media, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram as @ScottishBlethers. And if you'd like to leave a review, please do so on your podcast platform of choice. It's cheery bye from me.
Ta-ta the loo from me.
And if I don't see you through the week, I'll see you through the windy from me.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.